This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Well, another point at Old Trafford today for Manchester United, coming from behind yet again to Everton, as a rather unfortunate Victor Lindelof goal gave the Toffees the lead at around 36 minutes. And in the second half, Mason Greenwood, yes, the 18-year-old, coming off the bench to equalise for United with a quite sublimely taken goal. You might say a bit Robin Van Persie-esque. We'll be speaking about that in this, the Manchester United Fan Show, on a day where United fielded a youth academy product for the 4,000th consecutive game. 4,000th consecutive game. Not 40th, not 400th, the 4,000th consecutive game. Quite a remarkable stat, that. And anybody who sneers, anybody who goes, "Oh, it's all right, it's just in the squad, doesn't mean you could just field anyone. If you put him on the bench, you're not going to play him." Nonsense. Name me another club that has done that, and name me another club that will do that. It will not ever happen, I believe, in the history of not just English football, in world football. That's my say. Ben Senior here with me today. What say you?
I'm echoing them thoughts, mate. You can't see it, can you? Another club doing just what United have done. And I think the point is that it's not just been fielding youth players for the sake of it. The United Academy has produced some world-class players down the years. I think, okay, everyone sort of like hails Barcelona's academy as the one to bring through all these world-class talents, but I think United deserves more credit, because you look at the players down the years, and we always mention the class of 99, but even now we're bringing through Mason Greenwood, the saviour of this club at the minute. But yeah, long may it continue.
Yeah, indeed. We'll get into that and plenty more with Wayne Barton, actually, later on in the show, United author and historian. He'll be discussing everything about Manchester United's youth setup and how it has evolved over the years. Quite an incredible stat there. Ben, going on to the game itself, a draw, a fair result, you think?
I think when you sum it up, yeah, it was a fair result. United, we started pretty poorly, didn't we? We just didn't get out of the blocks. Everton looked up for it. Duncan Ferguson on the sidelines with his shirt on, and it was like 5 degrees and chucking it down. But
incredible, isn't it? I mean, he's properly playing the brand, isn't he? I think sometimes it's clever. I think it's a premeditated tactic. And you know what? It works, because everybody's talking about it. You've just mentioned it there. He's got the sweatband. He's got the watch from Howard Kendall, I believe, which is a lovely touch. Doesn't work, apparently, but that's a nice touch from here. He's got his kooks. He's got things about him that make him individual, and that's what you love as a manager. But yeah, I cannot. I mean, it's freezing up in Manchester.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's made a different stuff. And he was on the sidelines, but Calvert-Lewin today looked like Duncan Ferguson of years gone by. He was bullying United's defence in that first half at times. I think Luke Shaw, they looked like they were targeting Luke Shaw throughout the game. I thought he had a bit of a poor game. Lindelof, obviously, with the own goal, just sort of summed it up. The organisation was a bit all over the place. De Gea coming out and waving the ball away. But yeah, they picked it back up a bit second half. I think United just shaded the second half. And then when Greenwood came on, we seemed to have a bit more movement up front. And then that touch and the finish, it was just ice cold.
It absolutely was. We're going to get onto that in a minute. But I just want to discuss the goal, because personally, I thought United, not dominated, not controlled, but had the better of the opening stages in the first half hour. You thought, OK, this is a side playing with a bit of swagger, who haven't lost, of course, since that defeat to Bournemouth in the Premier League at the beginning of November. And it was clear that Ferguson had given Everton a bit of a directive. And it's not like they were huge playing out from the backside under Marco Silva, but they did attempt that. And with Jordan Pickford, they got a goalkeeper with great distribution. I don't know whether you noticed, but it appeared that pretty much every pass Jordan Pickford made was a long ball. He was launching them up to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who, like you said, was very much like Ferguson in his heyday. The goal for me, I know there was much debate at halftime as to whether it should have been a foul or not. And what aggravated me, by the way, about this debate, I know it doesn't take much to aggravate me. However, it was all like, yeah, oh, it's definitely a foul. Oh, like Graeme Souness, 100% that's a foul. Julian Lescott, oh yeah, no, I'd say that's a foul. Bakary Sagna, yeah, no, that's a foul. But you want your goalkeeper to do better. It doesn't matter. If it's a foul, it's a foul. However, what are your thoughts on David De Gea?
I think he did look a bit weak when he came out, I must admit. We can talk about VAR, but if we do that again, we'll all get a bit angry in this room. Yeah. So let's avoid that. I'll not infuriate you for another week. But I thought De Gea, he looked like De Gea of when he first came to United, coming out and sort of flapping a bit at crosses. I thought he could have done better there. The Everton, like you said, the tactic today were to come, be strong, long balls, and sort of throw this United defence about a bit. And I think we let them do that. We lost a bit of organisation. I think the communication wasn't there either. He sort of came out for it, tried to punch it, but then no one really knew if he was coming to get it or not. So I think a bit of communication wouldn't have gone amiss. And Lindelof, to be fair, did look like he was sleeping a little bit.
I mean, I know I speak about him quite a bit on this show, and I'm not his biggest fan. I'll be the first to admit that. And yes, he scored against Aston Villa. It doesn't really matter. You get a goal, it doesn't mean you're a great player. He's had some decent performances over the past few games. And I did say, fair play to him, but let's not get carried away, because as today showed, he's still got an error in his locker. I just don't think he's good enough to be a permanent fixture for United. What was he doing where he was? He was on nobody. He was, to coin a stupid cliche, in no man's land. He was facing towards a guy. It was awful defending.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I say organisation. It looked like a bit of chaos in that box. Were we going man to man? Were we trying to zonal mark? I mean, if Lindelof's zonal marking, I don't know what zone he's marking, because there was no Everton player within about 10 yards of him. So it's a bit strange, isn't it? I think you look at that goal and it's just bad from all angles for United's defence.
It's 12 consecutive Premier League games as well for David De Gea without a clean sheet. That's actually the longest run of his career. You referenced that first season, of course, in 11-12. He did not go more than 12 clean sheets, as he has done this season. So, listen, that's not just David De Gea's fault. That is a fault with the defence, as we know. We have to touch on Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well, by the way, who is getting better. Let's not beat around the bush. We talk a lot about players from the past, and Mark Hughes, who I'm sure we'll get onto later when we discuss the youth. Of course, he came through the Manchester United ranks in the 80s, and he was a player who had something characteristic about him that you don't really see with players nowadays. Mark Hughes was a great volleyer of the ball. You don't really see that nowadays. Players don't have particular intricacies, but Aaron Wan-Bissaka has that slide tackle, as the kids would say, Ben, especially with your hashtag murky jumper on today, on lock.
On lock, yes. Is there a player in history that has been better at recovery tackles than Aaron Wan-Bissaka? I don't know. I haven't seen it, if there is. That is literally his trademark. It's like cut and copy, paste again every weekend. And you saw it again today. You mentioned the clean sheets. I dread to think how many more goals we would have conceded if we hadn't had him just making that last-ditch tackle.
It's like he backs himself as well, isn't it? And I know we saw this at Crystal Palace. And actually, I thought today that this is a clear example of how going to a club like Manchester United does completely amplify your career and put it massively under the microscope. Because whilst Aaron Wan-Bissaka was doing that type of stuff at Crystal Palace, now he's doing it for United. It's on a global scale and everybody is seeing it. And the reaction from the fans, from the cauldron of Old Trafford, every time he did it, there were a couple of times when Gary Neville said, I'm always dubious of defenders that go to ground when they're in the box. But with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I'm completely fine, because you get, and sometimes it's with his, you know, you don't want to say wrong leg, because there isn't a wrong leg, but he goes with the leg that you wouldn't expect him to go with.
It's brilliant. Just watching him defend is an art form. We call him Spider-Man, don't we? And he just seems to, his limbs just come out from everywhere. You think a player's gone past him, and opposition players must be thinking this as well. They've done him. They've got dropped a shoulder, done him. And then suddenly this leg comes from nowhere and just gets the ball. And that is the amazing thing, is you say going to ground in the box, and any other player, I'd be nervous if you're seeing Victor Lindelof slide in the box. But when Aaron Wan-Bissaka does it, it's a tackle, out for a throw-in, job done.
Yeah, brilliant. It could be the start of many attacks over the course of the coming months. Years, we hope, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Manchester United. We have with us now Mark Flanagan, our Northwest correspondent. How you doing, Mark?
I'm all right, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. An Aaron Wan-Bissaka fan, are you? Because we are.
Oh, he's. I think, do you know what he does? I think he likes to give them half a yard just to do that extra slide in. I think you think, yeah, you know, go on, just I'm going to lull you into a false sense of security, but you're going to think you're going to get past me. But no, he's remarkable. It's funny, Ben mentioned there about he's the best I've seen. I was struggling to think of someone who was a better recoverer tackler. The only one I can think of was Carvalho at Chelsea. It was a master at being able to just sort of get back and just nick the ball away from players. But yeah, he's a special defender. That's certainly true.
Yeah, he is indeed. And at the other end of the pitch, Mason Greenwood, his seventh goal in all competitions this season, by the way. We saw him get a brace against AZ Alkmaar during the week in the Europa League. You've noticed something about him, Mark, that's slightly akin to a former United striker.
Well, yeah. As I mentioned before, as we were chatting about this a couple of hours ago, unfortunately, Gary Neville stole my thunder a little bit when he dropped it into commentary, and I thought, I was going to use that. Yeah, in terms of style, in terms of the way he moves, the way he holds himself, he just really reminds me of Robin van Persie. He also, thankfully for United, has that clinical ability to put the ball in the back of the net. This kid is special. He just oozes class. He has that thing where he just has time as well. All the great players just seem to have that little bit more time. And I think he's the best 18-year-old I can remember seeing since Rooney and Owen. He's probably not as good as Rooney, not quite as good as Owen at this age, but he's not a million miles behind. I think he's going to be absolutely fantastic, this lad. Two-footed as well. The fact he's got 2 feet, I think he could play anywhere across the front three. I mean, we talk about Rashford and he's much better coming in off the left, which he is. Martial plays down the middle, doesn't look the same player when he's out wide. This kid can do it all, in my opinion. And I think going forward, he needs to be playing on the right-hand side instead of Daniel James, particularly in games like this where the space is going to be, you know, there's not going to be as much space in behind, like the teams like Everton, who are going to not make it easy for United to get them on the counter-attack. This is the lad who can unlock a defence. And like Ben was saying, ice cold. I love the way he strokes the ball as well. He doesn't appear hurried, does he? He has got a brilliant knack of finding the corner, which is a wonderful knack to have if you're a striker. And I think going forward, I think Ollie's got to really think about playing this lad with Martial and Rashford. And as good as Daniel James has been, I think a couple of times it highlighted really well today. When James had opportunities, he just really struggled with composure with the final shot. Brilliant, you know, going, you know, on the counter-attack, that's great. And unfortunately, he's a little bit one-dimensional in that respect, where I just think this kid can do everything. And I know he's only 18 and people are going to say, well, you know, you've got to bring him in and bring him out. I'm not so sure about that. I think he's ready for it. And what a wonderful prospect of him and Rashford playing for United for a long time.
Mark, you mentioned that potential front three of Rashford on the left, Martial down the middle and Greenwood on the right. Do you think going forward long term that is United's or should be United's first choice front three? Because obviously the January transfer window is coming up and there's a lot of rumours about that as well.
Yeah, I think it is. If nobody was brought in, and obviously there's a lot of talk about Haaland, but as it stands at the moment, I think that is the best front three. I think Greenwood could play up the middle. I think he's slightly different. He's not quite as good as Martial in terms of dropping into the pockets and linking up play. Martial's still better at that than him. It depends who you're up against and how you want to play. But I just think he's just got that something as Greenwood that he just has this knack of being in the right place at the right time and being able to. He's also good at linking up as well. He's not quite as good as Martial at linking up, but he's pretty damn good. And I mean, let's see. I mean, there's talk about Sancho, isn't there? If Sancho comes in, well, he's going to want to play wide right. So let's wait and see. But if United had Rashford on one side and Sancho on the other and Greenwood through the middle with maybe 2 or 3 years' time, that's a frightening prospect. I could see him even surpassing Martial in 18 months, 2 years. I think he's that good.
Yep, I agree with you, Mark, to be fair. And it's a great point on Robin van Persie. Actually, as you first started saying that, the goal flashed up in front of us on our screens here in the studio. And it's just uncanny. And it's so beautiful to see as well, his stance and the way he plays. And I do think there is really something in this for strikers of the future that we're going to see. And in particular, some Dutch strikers as well. I know a great example isn't Vincent Janssen here, who came into the Premier League and flopped with Spurs. But when he did come into the Prem, I did notice with him a left-footed striker. And I thought he's definitely been studying Robin van Persie, just in the way that he plays, his poise on the ball. We know van Persie had that beautiful poise on the ball and that wand of a left foot. So hopefully, like you said, we will see that with Mason Greenwood moving forward. You did, however, mention a certain Mr. Haaland who may well be arriving at Old Trafford in January. We're going to be discussing that with Sam Pilger after this.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Ben Senior and our North West correspondent Mark Flanagan as well. Mark will be rejoining us for the latter part of the show, but Ben remains in the studio with me here today. Now, some interesting quotes coming out today from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer regarding the future of Erling Haaland, of course, son of Alf Inga, who played in the Premier League with Nottingham Forest and Manchester City, of course. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is saying today that he knows what Haaland wants to do and he knows what he is going to do. I don't have to offer any advice to other teams' players. Of course, Haaland, 19 at the moment, has scored 28 goals in 22 appearances for Red Bull Salzburg this season. And they currently top the Austrian Bundesliga table. We saw him in midweek, of course, against Liverpool in the Champions League, spurning, it has to be said, a few chances on that night. However, this is clearly a guy with plenty of promise. And on the line to talk about him now, we have Sam Pilger, sports writer for The Athletic, 442, Forbes Bleacher Report, and many, many more. Sam, how are you doing?
Very well. Good evening, Matt.
Mate, it's great to have you on the line. Let's talk Erling Haaland, because these quotes from Solskjaer, and before that, there was obviously plenty of speculation about him potentially arriving at Old Trafford in January. It would appear that that case is even stronger now.
It is indeed. I think my understanding is United have made him an offer, want him to join as soon as January. There's unconfirmed reports of his release clause being as low as 20 million euros, which is about 17 million pounds, which is an incredible amount. That hasn't, I don't know about that. That's been spoken a lot. I don't know if that's absolutely true, but that makes him even more attractive. So, I mean, Solskjaer, as you say, after the game against Everton today, has said he knows what he's doing. Haaland knows what he's doing. So I know that early last week and throughout the week, United were increasingly confident that they'd got Haaland, that he would be signing. But it hasn't yet been absolutely confirmed. Maybe Solskjaer knows something the rest of us don't yet. But it's looking promising for United.
Sam, it's an exciting prospect if Haaland was to come into this United side, but where would you see him fitting in with his style of play in the current United team?
I mean, well, strangely, I mean, Solskjaer said when he had him in Norway, of course, a couple of years ago, that he reminded him of Romelu Lukaku, which ironically, is, of course, is a player he's since had and sold. So I don't think that's the idea. I think he would have thought he'd developed in a different way. But of course, he's, you know, he's big and strong and prolific. I think he's a number nine. He's an out and out orthodox striker. I don't think he's someone he plays off the flanks too much. And that's where Martial is at the moment. But of course, United don't really have much depth there. Obviously, Greenwood is coming through and staking a claim, but he's still 18. You can't expect too much there. But it seems that Rashford, Martial, and James is the front three that's working well. But obviously, with the departures of Lukaku and Sanchez, United don't have any depth. So I see him playing there as a nine, and if he was to develop as he should and get the game time he wants, I suppose you're looking at moving Martial to the right. But you know, I mean, you know, as the cliche goes, that's a good problem to have. It's a problem United don't have at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be excited about it in a sense if you are a United fan. But is there a danger, Sam, that this could potentially upset the apple cart with the fact that, I love the fact that he's 19, by the way, that he's bringing in youth. You've got Marcus Rashford there, 22. You've got Anthony Martial, 24. Mason Greenwood, like you said, 18. So this is what we want to see. However, coming in and potentially rocking that boat with Anthony Martial, who we know can be a slightly temperamental soul, do you think that might cause a bit of a problem in the dressing room?
Well, I mean, of course, we've been here before, of course, because 2 years ago, Martial was probably started the 17-18 season, probably was United's best player, had won three Player of the Month awards. And then obviously Sanchez came in and Martial's form went off a cliff, and Sanchez, you know, didn't deserve to have sort of kicked him out of the side. So, you know, 2 years later, here we are again. I think Martial's playing well and doesn't deserve to be dropped. I think as well, you know, a 19-year-old coming in. I mean, I know Haaland's concerned about playing time because he's the main man at Salzburg you know, he just wants to play like any footballer. So he is slightly concerned about playing time. But I think there should be enough, you know, a Europa League, a lot of games, still in the League Cup too, FA Cup about to start, not halfway through the league yet. There's plenty of games there. But yes, it could. But I mean, United are in a lot weaker position than when they were 2 years ago. And but Sanchez, obviously, that was the season they finished runners-up. And this side does need competition, which for places which they don't really have at the moment.
There is, of course, the connection with the fact they're both Norwegian and the fact that they were both at Molde together. Do we need to be concerned, though, Sam, that Haaland's agent is Mino Raiola, of course, yeah. Now looked after Zlatan, not so much a problem, looks after Paul Pogba, potentially a problem. And we've seen him bring players to United before, and he seem to be very much in bed with Mourinho that summer when all those players came in, and you kind of look at Mkhitaryan as one of those as well. Is that going to be a problem moving forward?
I mean, I don't know if it's a problem. I think it presents the deal with complications, and United, I think, want the players so much that they're willing to deal with Raiola. But yeah, I mean, that does add a layer to it, almost like the sort of Daniel Levy layer with anything to do with Tottenham. You know it's not going to be easy, and certainly with a client. I mean, him having that. But I think the Norwegian bond is obviously a strong calling card. Him being his former, Solskjaer being his former manager and compatriot, obviously being a former teammate of his father as well with the Norwegian national team. And, you know, United are the biggest side who are showing the most interest in him. There is an argument within his camp, he's only 19, that he goes to an intermediate club, if you like, Leipzig or Dortmund in the Bundesliga, although obviously Dortmund probably wouldn't like being called an intermediate side. But you know, in the terms of the hierarchy of European football, you know, I suppose they are a selling club ultimately. Players don't remain there for their whole career. So there is an idea that, you know, he's still only 19. Why don't you go to the Bundesliga for 1 or 2 years and then come to the Premier League when you're 21, 22? So I think these are one of the decisions he'll be making. I mean, I understand he went to Leipzig and Dortmund last week. There's the offer there from United. So, he's got some big decisions to make.
Sam, you mentioned that Haaland's got decisions to make, but have United identified him as the only forward target, or are the club looking at other recruitments in them sort of areas?
I think, Sancho is a long-term project. I think that's certainly somebody else that they've identified. My understanding is that if United had qualified for the Champions League last season, there's a very good chance Sancho would have signed last summer. United's failure to get to the Champions League and the fact that Dortmund were still there put paid to that for at least a year. But they're still there. They're still monitoring him. They're still ready to pay a huge amount for him. The fact that Dortmund got to the knockout stage of the Champions League again, which, you know, has such an influence, has put pay to possibly it happening in January. There were rumours that maybe it'd fallen out with Dortmund, but I think the fact that they've qualified for that, he's likely to stay, and that's something. United are confident, possibly, of happening in the summer. And then, you know, I mean, that's for attackers, and but obviously midfield is huge there. And I know they're keen to bring in midfielders. I don't know who at this stage, but obviously the midfield is a huge area. Fred and Scott McTominay have obviously done well in recent weeks. Pogba's still to come back, so suddenly it looks like there's a bit of competition there. But overall, it's a hugely an area that needs a lot of work. And in terms of outgoings, probably Matic, Nemanja Matic, I can see leaving in January, which will relieve a burden on the wage bill, and they'll look to probably bring somebody in. I'd be very, very surprised if nobody came in January. It's not a great time to buy, but United's squad was so unbalanced after the summer, signing three but letting six or seven, if you include Fellaini, I think it was seven between January and the summer went. So there's certainly space to bolster the squad.
Sam, it's been great having you on. Of course, just to finish, the 4,000th consecutive game, of course, United fielding a youth product today. You've covered the club for many years. Who's your favourite over the time that you've been covering the club?
As a youth graduate or all-time favourite player?
As a youth graduate, yeah.
As a youth graduate, I think I'd have to revert right back to my childhood and Norman Whiteside. He was in the 80s growing up. Brian Robson and Norman Whiteside were my two favourite players. Obviously, Robson came in from West Brom, but Whiteside came through the youth ranks and discovered by Bob Bishop, the same man who discovered George Best in Northern Ireland. And yeah, I was a few days before my birthday in 1985, lucky enough to see Norman Whiteside scored the winner at Wembley against Everton. And then years later, as a journalist, he recreated that goal for me in a restaurant using ketchup bottles and salt and pepper shakers to show me how he used Pat Vandenhauer as a screen and curled the ball around Neville Southall. So that was a nice moment, thinking, God, I was a 12-year-old at Wembley and now here I am watching him recreate it for me. So I've been lucky enough to say it a lot, but yeah, Whiteside, Norman Whiteside certainly holds some affection for me.
Great story to end on. Thank you, Sam.
No worries.
That was Sam Pilger, their sports writer for The Athletic, 442 Forbes, Bleacher Report, and a coverer of Manchester United for many years. What a great story that was.
The ketchup bottles had me.
Mate, in years to come, Marcus Rashford is going to be sitting in a restaurant. He's going to recreate one of his finest goals in front of you. Of course, that goal from Norman Whiteside against Everton in the 1985 FA Cup final. What a goal. Like he said, he used Pat Vandenhauer as a shield. He didn't shift it like you see players do now. He just used them as a shield to curl it beyond, at the time, who was one of the best goalkeepers in English football, if not world football, in Neville Southall. So good memories. And in fact, like he said, a youth product. We are going to get into that. And of course, the 4,000th, I'm going to keep saying it throughout this show, youth academy product used in a United squad today in succession. Wayne Barton, United author and historian, will be talking through all of that after this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beardall, joined as ever by United enthusiast Ben Senior. Now, Ben, the year was 1937. The venue was Craven Cottage. The players were Tom Manley and Jackie Wassell. The result doesn't matter. We lost 1-0 to Fulham, but on that day, United fielded two youth team graduates, and 4,000 games later, some 80 years later, there or thereabouts, it is still happening. Every squad that United have put out.
Wow. I remember that day like it was yesterday.
Absolutely. A great story, of course, which we've spoken about many times on the show already. And now to speak about it even more, we have Wayne Barton, United historian, United author, United pretty much everything. How are you doing, Wayne?
I'm not bad. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, boss. So we spoke about this earlier in the week. 4,000 games in a row for United fielding that youth team product. What a story.
It's incredible, and it's so intrinsic to United's identity as well. There was a game a couple of years ago, and it's probably erased from most people's memories, but the game before we played in Stockholm in the Europa League final, Jose Mourinho fielded four or five kids against Crystal Palace on the last day of the season. And for me, that was the best atmosphere of the season. And I always hoped that, well, of the many mistakes that Jose made in charge, one of them I thought that he might engage more with was the idea that the crowd at Old Trafford would always get behind, you know, the younger players, and he would see what a tangible difference it makes when the younger players are given an opportunity, because the crowd reacts in a way that they don't to other players, and in a way that I don't think other stadiums or other fan bases in England react to their homegrown players. And I'm not saying that as a sort of a, you know, look at us kind of thing, because I'm a United fan, but I just think that the relationship that's there and it's so established is so special. And when a youth academy product comes in and is playing for the first team, there's a will from the support for them to do better. I mean, we've seen it countless times over the years. I mean, you've got Makeda about 10 and a half years ago, you know, scoring that great goal against Aston Villa. Everyone remembers, you know, can remember the game against Port Vale in 94 when...
Paul Scholes.
So complained about the Port Vale fans were taking it to the House of Commons to try and say that United should go and field the proper team, and I bet those tickets go for some serious money on eBay now. You know, so, yeah. You know, it's such a crazy thing to see that it's lasted this long, and the, you know, the relationship between going back, I mean, you and I have talked about Busby and Murphy in the 50s and the 40s, so to see the relationship is still the same kind of thing, and the dynamic is still the same kind of thing. It's something that, you know, United are often criticised for the commercial arm of the club, but that's something that you can't manipulate. It's something that can't be bought or fabricated, and it's something that as a supporter I'm incredibly proud for my club to have.
Yeah, I was reading some quotes from Nick Cox, head of academy at the moment, of course, earlier in the week, and the fact that he was saying this has been ingrained, like you were saying, over many, many years. It's something you don't just turn on overnight. The academy at United is front and central, and this is what Nick Cox said, front and central in a way that is not replicated pretty much anywhere else in the world. And I don't want people to go, oh, you can't just say that Manchester United are like no other club in the world, but tell me another club that has done this in world football, and tell me another club that will eventually do this. You can never see this being repeated.
No, there was a famous success of Ajax in the 90s under Louis van Gaal, and Ajax have got a bit of a history of it, and Barcelona have more of a recent history of it. And that's the point. Clubs go through spells, periods in their history where they are renowned for it. But United has been prolific. Every one of their major successes has had a number of youth players in the team, you know, like you go through. And if they've had three in the team, that's a disappointing turnout, you know what I mean? And to other clubs, that would be majorly impressive. It would be the best thing in their... Well, to most of the clubs, I mean... I guess the closest thing in English football to most people's minds would be West Ham. You know, they had the famous academy in the 90s, what brought through Joe Cole, Michael Carrick, Rio Ferdinand. And with all due respect, that doesn't even compare. I mean, we talk about the likes of Ryan Giggs. The top five appearance makers in United's history were produced by the club. That is incredible. Mm. When you think that they're over 400 appearances, you've got Giggs, Neville, Folks, Charlton and Scholes. All of those five players are the top five appearance makers for the club, and they were produced by the club. And there are many more in the top 100, of course, but that's astonishing. And, you know, rightly so, it's front and centre. And I'm so glad, although Ollie's getting a bit of divided stick from some sections of the support, I'm so glad that that's become a prominent factor in United's identity again. And, you know, if he was sacked tomorrow, what a legacy to have reintroduced. It's incredible. And, yeah, that I don't think it's, like I was saying earlier about the commercial arm, you worry sometimes that it might get reduced into some kind of tacky slogan, but it isn't. It's there. It's a true part of our identity. And what better way to celebrate with... Mason Greenwood scoring as well. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Mason Greenwood, and in comparison, some of the players are the great players of the United Academy in the past. How important is it that we've still got these players coming through to the first team, and not just coming through, but making a big impact as well?
Yeah, Ben, for me, that's a massive thing. Take Brandon Williams in recent weeks. Now, he's having his ups and downs. He's had a few bumps, but he looks so promising at left back. Today, there's the argument that Luke Shaw shouldn't have played and that Brandon should have played. And I tend to agree with that. And what I'm saying about the patience and the relationship that supporters have with these kind of players is that they'll forgive Williams an up and down, and they'll enjoy seeing his journey on that progress. Whereas if that opportunity in the past, which has gone to, with all due respect, Matty O'Darmian, the players don't have that relationship, the supporters don't have that relationship with Matty O'Darmian, as decent a player as he was, and an Italian international to boot as well. But Brandon Williams coming through, it excites in a way, because he's got an attitude, he's local, he knows what it takes to represent the club. He's managed his way to go through the levels of the club, so he's represented at the reserves and the under-18s and the youth club. So he knows what it means to represent the club, and he knows the sort of kicks you're going to get playing for Manchester United in a way that a foreign player just doesn't understand. And I'm not saying that all foreign... I'm talking about there being a natural balance, and this is what the young players really can provide. So you've got the likes of Brandon, you've got, you know, Greenwood coming in and playing as well as he did, and obviously Marcus Rashford, who's come on leaps and bounds this season as well. Scott McTominay, who's emerged as our best central midfielder, and I include Paul Pogba in that. Scott McTominay has emerged as our best midfielder, and it's much, much better for me that these are players that we've produced ourselves and not bought in. It means a lot more to me. As a supporter, I don't know about you guys, but it certainly does to me.
No, mate, absolutely. And what we're actually seeing as well now is the slightly new development phase, whereby you mentioned Federico Makeda there, of course, an Italian. We're seeing Tahith Chong, a Dutchman, coming through the side. You look at the likes of Timothy Fosu-Mensah as well. What we're seeing is youth team products, but not local lads. Is that an issue when you talk about their affinity with the fans, or the fact that they are coming through the youth ranks is still the same affection that the fans have?
No, I think that the supporters certainly do have that affection for those players. And don't get me wrong, I'm talking about a squad player in Darmian who came in and he filled a place what should have been given to an academy product. You know, you like to force a mentor. When he came through, He was basically schooled for about 8 or 9 months by Van Gaal before he was dropped into the first team. I loved him. I think he's a great player, and he'd been through that sort of process. He's been there at Carrington now, as it is now. You know, he's been with the younger players. Swan Davey is another one. I know he's English, but we talk about younger players who've been through this more recent transition. And yeah, maybe the foreigners... I understand what you're saying, but I still think if they've been through that process, there is still the connection there, because they've been through a different side of knowing Manchester United before they've got to the first team. They've been through this school of hard knocks in the better teams of the country, the better youth teams of the country have come up against United, and they've still wanted to beat them. You know, the likes of Man City and Chelsea have recently got this great reputation as a youth team. They still don't have anywhere near the prestige of playing for a Manchester United youth team or reserve side. So they've got to try and beat them and hammer them. And that's a big thing for those kids to live up to. So it's a big part of their developmental process to come through. So by the time they do get to the first team, hopefully they do understand a little bit more about what it takes to represent United than a player like, and I hate to use him as an example because it sounds like I'm picking on him, but Darmian, for example. You've got a player, you know, a player in Fosu-Mensah who's already been through that process. So it's there is a connection there already, and there's a want for them, you know, a want for any Manchester United player to do well, but especially the younger players.
Yep, indeed, Wayne. Mate, it's been great having you on. You have, of course, covered United for a long time now. We had Sam Pilger on earlier on. He said his favourite product of the youth team was Norman Whiteside. Who's yours?
As a player who entertained me, you know, I can't look any further than Ryan Giggs, because he was such an entertaining player, was such a great dribbler, and scored probably the best goal that I've ever seen. But, you know, on a personal level, because I've worked with a few of them, I can't let an opportunity like this go by and not mention the likes of Brian Greenough, who I wasn't lucky enough to see play in the flesh, but I worked with him and I know what United meant to him, and I know what a good player he was and what he meant to so many United fans. Mick Duxbury, who I've worked with as well. These are the sort of players, the unsung heroes, who were the heartbeat of the United side. Do you know what I mean? So those kind of players mean just as much as the likes of Ryan Giggs, you know, the glory players, Paul Scholes, like I was saying earlier, Bobby Charlton. You've got all these other players who form the backbone of the side, like Brian and like Mick, and that's why we're so lucky, is that we've got so many of them to choose from. Giggs, obviously, like I said, is the highlight, but I wanted to sort of shine a light on those that don't get mentioned so often.
Top stuff. Wayne, it's been a pleasure talking to you this evening. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Take care. Thank you.
That was Wayne Barton, the United historian and author. You can find him at waynebartonbooks.com. And you can find us right here on Love Sport on the Manchester United Fan Show.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
The Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by Ben Senior and our North West correspondent, Mark Flanagan. Before we move on, just a very quick bit of admin. Of course, BBC Sports Personality of the Year this evening. Once won by Ryan Giggs, once won by David Beckham, on a day where we're talking about Manchester United youth products. I thought I'd just shove that in there. But today's winner, Dina Asher-Smith in third, Lewis Hamilton in second, and Ben Stokes, the English cricketer, comes out on top for this year's Sports Personality of the Year award. I'm sure there will be plenty of reaction on that on Love Sport as the night progresses and the morning commences on Breakfast Tomorrow with Patrick Christie's and Richard Lee. But right now we are focusing back on Manchester United, and Ben, a big fixture on Wednesday the 18th of December. No, not El Clasico between Barcelona and Real Madrid. Manchester United hosting Colchester of League Two in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals.
Oh, you've ramped it up, haven't you? Yeah, it's one of those games where you look at and think potential slip up. You just worry about it a little bit. But no, we should be going into that game full of confidence, really, in the way we're playing, and going and get a big win. And you'd like to hope that after Mason Greenwood coming on today, scoring, getting that equaliser, that we do bring a few of our youth products. I know this seems to be the theme of the night, youth academy products. So you're hoping we see the likes of Twan Zabi at the back, possible starts for Gomez and Garner in midfield, and then Greenwood up top. So it'll be an exciting night to hopefully see the United of the future.
Yeah, they've gone on a reasonably decent run at the moment, Colchester. In terms of league form, you have to say, haven't lost since mid towards the end of October against Morecambe. To be fair, of all the teams to lose to, Morecambe are rock bottom of League Two at the moment. They lost at home to Morecambe, but haven't lost in League Two since the 19th of October. So not on a bad run. It would appear sometimes you see with lower league clubs that they take their eye off the ball in terms of league form when they've got massive games coming up in the Carabao Cup. And actually, speaking to a few Colchester fans in the lead up to this, they are positively buzzing. They're basically saying, this doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem real that we're going to Old Trafford to play in a massive cup tie.
Well, it's their FA Cup final almost, isn't it? Them to League Cup final to come to Old Trafford and play there and have a day out. And it means everything to fans like that. And you do love to see it, because United is the one club in the country that everyone wants to draw in that round. Every fan across the country wants an away tie at Old Trafford. And the players will be up for it too. That's what you can't forget. You look at Everton, the way they came to Old Trafford today, massively up for it. The Colchester players will be coming and they'll be up for it on Wednesday night. They'll be coming. They might try and be physical. They might try and play long balls. But it's their chance to shine. So you've got to give them respect and say, look, like, you've got to beat the 11 players that are on that pitch. But hopefully we should be able to do that.
Hopefully. You'd like to think so, yeah. Colchester coming up on Wednesday, and then it is a trip to Watford next week in the Premier League. I don't know what just happened, but I think our producer's fallen off his chair for crying out loud. We're going to move back to Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent. Now, Mark, we had Sam Pilger earlier on talking about Erling Haaland potentially arriving at the club. What do you make of it?
For me, it's not the priority. Central midfield is where it's all at for United at the moment. If today's display didn't emphasise that again, I don't know what will. McTominay is improving and he's got a lot better this season, but his distribution again, two or three times today, gave the ball away when he was under a great deal of pressure. He's a similar type of player to Fred, actually. I think United have got to prioritise an attacking midfielder and someone to play in behind the front guys. Just interestingly as well, just a point I'd really like to make, there's so much information and news swirling around who United are going to buy. And I just think we need to sort of rein it in a little bit when you consider that in the last seven seasons, Man United's net spend has been 50 million, 130 million, 120 million, 50 million, 130 million and 68 million going back to 13-14. So that's how much we spent each season for the last 7 years. There's people talking, there was a newspaper saying that Ollie's going to be handed 250 million. Well, Man United don't even have 250 million in the bank. They've burnt through a lot of their cash reserves in the last 18 months. So unless they are going to sell Pogba, I think a lot of what we're hearing in the press at the moment is quite a bit of hot air. Hopefully what isn't hot air is information surrounding Saúl Ñíguez, the Atletico Madrid midfielder who would be perfect for United. There's also a report out suggesting the very interesting Paredes, who's the Argentinian who is back up for the Argentinian player who plays for PSG. So those are the type of players they really need to be going after. They really need help in the centre of the park, because I just don't think with the personnel that United have got in that position at the moment, they've got a realistic chance of making a sustained challenge for the top four. You know, we've seen it too many times this season now. They just cannot break teams down who sit deep, who sort of stymie United's counter-attacking play.
Yeah, you thought that, didn't you, Ben, with regards to the midfield today? You just saw McTominay and Fred again, like you said there, Mark, just McTominay losing possession on a few occasions, Ben. Mm.
Yeah, I think that's the missing link, I think, in this United side at the minute. Just that, like we said, that position just in front of McTominay and Fred, just to piece it all together, because we've got the players up front with the pace and we've got the players behind them to stop the goals, but we just need that one player to sort of piece it all together. But Mark, I don't know about you, but how many players do you think were off at the minute in this United side?
We're off or are off?
Well, in terms of how many players do we need to go and get to sort of see as the missing links in this United side?
I think three. I think Shaw had an awful first half. I'm not sure he's the answer, the fullback. And in two in midfield, I think you either play McTominay or Fred with two other guys. I mean, I've mentioned a few weeks ago that United are absolutely desperate to get Odegaard, who's on loan at Sociedad. He would be perfect. That could only be done as part of a deal with Pogba, but that's very, very unlikely now with the way that Odegaard's playing. He's almost playing too well, and Madrid have spent a lot of money. If United want to offload Pogba quickly, the most likely opportunity is Juventus, which would mean someone like Emre Can coming the other way. There's been a lot of talk about that. Juventus have a lot of central midfielders, and two or three of them just aren't getting a look in. So Can would be helpful. I'm not sure he's the answer. I think he's too similar to actually McTominay. He'd play a very similar role. It's someone like a Bruno Fernandes or a James Maddison is what they're desperately crying out for, who, like you say, can link between the midfield and the attack.
Mark, it has been great having you on yet again. Just before you go, I'm just going to ask for a name, because we're at the very end of the show. We've been speaking about youth products in today's show. Your favourite of all time to come through?
Oh, gosh. And I can hear the music as well. Yeah, I think it's got to be Scholes.
It has to be Scholes.
He just had it all, didn't he?
He did indeed. Mark Flanagan, thank you very much for joining us. Ben, I'm going to come to you as well. Of course, the 4,000th time, I'm going to mention this in today's show, the 4,000th consecutive game that United handed a youth team player, a squad place in today's game. Your favourite youth team product to come through?
I'll go my childhood hero growing up, David Beckham.
Yep, I'm going to go with you on that one, boss. That was mine as well, just purely for the hair. Loved the hair. No, of course. What a fantastic player. A hugely underrated player, you might see. I still believe that there has not been a player like David Beckham in English football since. This has been the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. We see you next week at 9 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.